Now, Monitor brings you Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence E. Spivak. Ready for the spontaneous, unrehearsed conference are four of America's top news reporters. Their questions do not necessarily reflect their point of view, but may be their way of getting a story for you. Now, here is the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
Welcome once again to Meet the Press. At 6 o'clock, the second Rockefeller report was released to newspapers, television, and radio. It deals with the immediate and long-range social and economic challenges facing America. Our guest on Meet the Press is Mr. Nelson A. Rockefeller, the president of the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, which sponsored the study. The experts who drew the report foresee a vast expansion in our economy over the next 10 years, with the present recession only an incident. Among the problems considered in the report are tax reform, a stockpile of public works, improved social security, and greater opportunities for education. The first of the Rockefeller studies, released in January, dealt with the menace of world communism and the military defense measures needed to meet it. The report has been widely quoted in debates in Congress on the defense program. In the last 18 years, Mr. Rockefeller has served as advisor and executive under three presidents. Among his assignments, coordinator of Inter-American Affairs, assistant secretary of state, and undersecretary of health, education, and welfare. He is now being discussed widely as a possible Republican nominee for governor of New York. He is running high in the polls. And now seated around the press table, ready to interview Mr. Rockefeller, are John B. Oakes of the New York Times, Marcus Childs of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Merrill Muller of NBC News, and Lawrence E. Spivak, our regular member of the Meet the Press panel. Now, Mr. Rockefeller, if you're ready, we'll start the questions with Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Rockefeller, in a quick reading of your report, I'm not quite sure whether or not you recommend a tax cut or whether you just discuss one. Now, are you recommending a tax cut?
Yes, we do.
Why didn't you say when, and why didn't you say how much? You were very specific in your first report. Why were you so general in this report?
Well, we recommended that there be a tax cut, that it was the fastest way to get an anti-recession movement underway that the government could take. As far as the amount of money was concerned, after considerable deliberation, it was decided that unless we knew exactly when the cut would be made, it was hard to tell how much should be made.
Well, that's the question. That's the thing that makes me wonder. Are you recommending an immediate tax cut? Do you interpret your report to say that we ought to have an immediate tax cut, an income tax cut?
I would.
This is your personal opinion.
That is correct.
Is that the consensus of opinion of the group that drew this report?
Well, the wording reflects the consensus of opinion.
Well, that's the thing. I think that the wording, frankly, is quite evasive, and it seems watered down and very general, and the reason I ask about it. It says this panel believes that a tax cut would help overcome the current recession and expand employment, but it doesn't say that this panel recommends an immediate tax cut. Now, does the panel recommend an immediate tax cut? The
panel recommends a tax cut, and there is some variation as to when that should take place.
How much of a variation can you tell
Question
us?
Question of a month.
Just a month. But
yeah.
The entire panel is an agreement.
That is correct.
That a tax cut ought to be at least within the month.
That is correct.
And you yourself are for a tax cut immediately.
That is correct.
Mr. Muller.
I want to get back to this tax issue in just a minute, Mr. Rockefeller, but first I'd like to pick on you a little bit. You say you would recommend a tax cut, and you say the committee, of course, considers one to be due in a month. How much of a minority group was there on this committee? You say that they all did not agree on all points.
We don't have, in these reports as we've worked them out, we don't have minority opinions. The group tries to find a consensus. And one of the interesting things, one of the exciting things, has been with the people with diversified backgrounds on that panel have tried to find a place where they could come to agreement as to the action that should be taken in relation to the problem under discussion.
Mm-hmm. The committee report stresses repeatedly systematic tax reform.
That's correct.
The quotation. What kind of systematic tax reform did they have in mind? Were they discussing anything in general?
Yes, the whole basic structure of the report is built around growth, the growth of the economy in terms of the well-being of the individual in this country and our participation in the world. And the conclusion was that growth was a major factor. And therefore, we centered our discussions on tax reform around the impact of taxes on growth.
Well, you don't spell out, though, what kind of systematic tax reform you would recommend.
No, but we mention the areas in the report which we feel are important to discuss in terms of growth, the impact of current taxes on growth.
On this point of growth, I'm a little stumped. You stress repeatedly that a tax cut is needed, that systematic tax reform is needed, and then you go on to greatly expand government services in all levels of government and come out, you hope, with a tax structure which, percentage-wise, 10 years hence will be less than today. How can you manage that?
Oh, well, that's very clear for this reason. Today we're faced with a recession. Therefore, what action one would take today in relation to taxes, we felt the thing to do was cut taxes. If you were in a period of inflation, the thing might well be to do increase taxes. In terms of the long-term growth, our feeling was that study should be given very careful study now to adjusting taxes to encourage growth. Therefore, we would like to see a more flexible tax approach in this country, which would meet this problem of countercyclical action when it's necessary.
Mr. Childs.
Mr. Rockefeller, your recommendations in your previous report on defense reorganization were adopted almost entirely in President Eisenhower's recommendations to Congress. Many people are saying you were the author of these recommendations. Now, I'd like to ask you whether you think you're going to be as successful in getting the Eisenhower administration to take the recommendations in this economic report, such as a tax cut.
Well, we feel they're very useful, and the president certainly hasn't closed the door to a tax cut.
Well, yeah, on the other hand, Secretary Anderson is pretty strongly opposed to a tax cut, isn't he?
Well, I wouldn't have said that was the way he'd put it. He said, if I'm correct, at the present time.
You think that this report is going to be influential, perhaps, in bringing Mr. Anderson
well, in? To the degree that consideration is given to the consensus of this group of people who represent a good cross-section and who've given a long period of study to this, I hope it'll be helpful.
You've been called an Eisenhower Republican. Does that designation fit pretty well, Mr. Rockefeller?
Well, if it reflects my respect and admiration for the president, it certainly does.
And when you were down there in the government, you found that some Republicans didn't go along quite as well as other Republicans on matters such as foreign aid and so on. Would you be willing, in the support of the president, to run for public office, such as the Senate of the United States?
Well, to tell you the honest truth, that's something I haven't considered.
Well, you must surely have considered it, Mr. Rockefeller, because a lot of people are talking about it. As Mr. Brooks said, you're running very high in the polls.
But he referred to the governorship, if I'm correct.
That's right. I beg your pardon. How about the governorship?
Well, it's a tremendously significant position, and to be mentioned in connection with it, frankly, from my point of view, is a great honor.
Mr. Oakes.
Mr. Rockefeller, as you doubtless know, Thomas J. Curran, the New York County Republican leader, recently asked for an end to coyness on the part of men who were seeking the Republican nomination for governor. Now, I would like to put the question directly to you. Do you have the intention of being a candidate? Would you like to be one? Would you accept the nomination if were offered? And if not, why not?
Well, that's about four questions. Let me see if I can follow that sequence. The first on end to coyness, I presume, would presuppose that somebody had made up their mind.
Well, nobody's announced officially yet.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Well, as matters stand, I'm not a candidate for governor. I have followed the political situation in the state and as Mr. Childs suggests, in terms of the national picture. The situation is developing and moving very rapidly in the state, and my relation to it is a matter of question which, frankly, I haven't got the basis for an answer today.
It would be fair to say, though, that if the nomination were offered to you, you would accept it.
No, I don't think that's correct. I appreciate your mentioning that, and I would be tremendously flattered if it were, and should that happen, I would then have to make a decision.
Your negative response didn't mean that you would not accept it.
Nor did it mean that I would.
Mr. Spivak.
Rockefeller, I don't like to badger you on that question, but I would like to ask you one or two more questions. Are you interested in the job at all?
Well, I'm interested in the political situation in this country because I feel that the two political parties increasingly are going to have to present the issues to the people of this country. Decisions are being made today that affect us 5, 10 years from now. People are in office for short periods of time. Therefore, the parties are, to my way of thinking, increasingly important in relation to the future of our nation, and my interest in the party is very real and very live.
Well, you speak of the nation, but what about the state? I mean, are you considering this matter at all? You must know, of course, all the talk that's been going on, the polls that have gone on, the speeches that you yourself have made. Most people think that you are strongly interested. Can you tell us whether you are interestedly considering the question of whether or not...
I'd say I'm interestedly following the question.
And what will make you say yes or no? I mean, what are the determining factors that would make you consider running or not, outside of the actual nomination?
Well, really, it would be very hard to say at this point, because if that situation does crystallize to a point where I have to make a decision because the matter is put up in a way that I am faced with a decision... At that time, and on the basis of what the problems are and the circumstances, then I'd make a decision.
Well, may I ask you this thing? Do you think that the present governor has done a satisfactorily good job for the state?
Well, that's a pretty hard question to ask a Republican.
Well, ought to be an easy answer, then.
I'd like to pick
Mr.
this up.
Mr. Mueller.
Thank you, Ned. I'd like to pick this up on the governor thing just for one question, then go back to your tax report here. You use the language we've heard before. It comes from Mr. Eisenhower. It's a great honor to be mentioned in connection with the governorship. I'm not a candidate, but you haven't said, will you accept a draft?
Well, that again, very frankly, I'm interested in the situation. If that developed, then I'd have to decide at that time. And I don't see how you can decide a question as important as that this far ahead, I'll be very frank.
Wouldn't you consider it a public duty to answer a draft call?
Well, Sydney's closely related to it.
I'd like to get back again to the money angles in this report. All the way through, this report speaks of expanding government services, or getting government cooperation in private initiatives.
Hmm.
How do you protect the inherent dynamics, as you call it, of the free enterprise system when you more and more draw the government into it?
Well, if you didn't have a sharply rising gross national product, in other words, if the productivity of this country wasn't increasing and you increased government spending very importantly, you would have the problem, you say. Therefore, one of the interesting conclusions this group came to in studying the needs of this country in terms of our growing population and the growing problems we're faced with, the only answer that we felt would be effective in solving this problem was to encourage the growth of the economy. But a 3% rate we didn't feel would do it. A 4% growth rate, which is what we've had the past 10 years, just about does it. A 5% growth rate would really put us in a position to meet the responsibilities and opportunities we have.
But your report speaks of greatly expanded welfare services.
That's correct.
And in the private field, for example, speaks of a 400% jump in private financing of home construction, of low-cost housing, and so on.
Mm.
Yet the report does not show in its estimates, in its projections of income, or its projections of outgo 10 years hence, the greatly increased cost of welfare services, which must come from taxes.
Oh, no, I think the report does. If you looked at that summary in the back that gives this total picture here for 1967, we show welfare services totaling now about $20 billion, an estimate low for, well, the range for 67 was between $38 billion and $45 billion. This is on page of the summary 35. And you get over into public works, except hospitals. This is roads, water supply, urban renewal. We estimate with a present expenditure of about $9.5 billion, We estimate a range in 65 of between 20 and 27 billion.
Mr. Childs.
I'd like to quote a sentence from your report on the tax cut, Mr. Rockefeller.
Right.
The report says, a tax cut that importantly influences a prompt recovery that might not otherwise take place would be a good bargain for the economy as a whole and for the fiscal position of the federal government as well. Now, we are seeing apparently pretty careful estimates of a deficit of anywhere from $8 to $10 billion. Can you justify that statement in relation to such a big deficit? A statement about the fiscal position of the federal government?
Well, I think you've got to look at this in the perspective. To begin with, the administration's estimate of the deficit isn't quite as high as the figure that you've given there. We're running now a gross national product about $25 billion below what it would have been had it kept its growth rate. Therefore, something that could stimulate the growth of our economy, if it were a tax cut that would do it, one has to take that into consideration because it would importantly affect the total take on taxes. So that the question is, how can we most effectively stimulate the growth of the economy and the creation of jobs at the present time?
But you would be willing to accept a fairly large federal deficit temporarily, would you?
Yes, with the understanding that the country was ready to face the situation squarely as soon as the situation had picked up as far as jobs were concerned, and as soon as the economy was on the move forward again, and then to put the taxes back and to cut down on other items that could put pressure in terms of inflation.
But politically speaking, taxes are almost never put back, are they, Mr. Rockefeller?
Well, I think our country's got to come to a point where we use taxes, where we use public works in terms of maintaining a balance and a growth in this economy. To me, this is one of the exciting things we're faced with as a nation, that we have got to be able to do this kind of thing on a more sophisticated basis as a people.
Mr. Rockefeller, you said that you did not recommend in your report any specific amount for tax reduction because of the uncertainty about the timing.
Mm.
Suppose that this decision were to be made today, what would you think the proper amount of a tax cut would be as of today?
Well, one of the members of the subpanel and the overall panel was Arthur Burns, who is a very experienced and knowledgeable person in this field. He made a speech, I guess, 2 or 3 weeks ago, in which he mentioned $5 billion. Other groups who've been associated with the panel have made statements or given speeches in the range of $5 to $7 billion.
What's your personal opinion about it?
Well, that range would seem to me was reasonable.
From $5 to $7 billion. Mr. Oakes.
Mr. Rockefeller, on the basis of what you've just said and the whole philosophy of your report, which involves really governmental responsibility to a considerable degree for economic welfare, for the nation's economic welfare, aren't you moving very far in the direction of the New Deal philosophy? Isn't the whole report an expression of government concern for economic welfare as against leaving these matters to rugged individualism?
Well, the introduction of the chapter on economic growth and social welfare has a very interesting section that I'd like to call your special attention to on the subject of the impact of growth on the individual, the direct impact and the indirect. And the direct impact is increase in wages and the rising standard of living. And that is where the major gain in the welfare of the individual in this country, and only in the indirect form through such institutions as private, philanthropic, and public, is where we're talking in this report. And I think perhaps the emphasis was too much in terms of your reading of it on the government expenditure.
You don't feel that the whole premise has moved in that direction. The basis for the report has moved away from individual enterprise to...
No, I think that whole section on growth and what stimulates growth, the first item under that is the government's creation of the climate for growth. We talk about a climate in foreign countries for private capital, but sometimes we don't realize that a climate's very important here for the initiative and drive of private enterprise.
You aren't accepting the welfare state philosophy by the emphasis on public works, on unemployment insurance, on all the whole run of...
No, but nor do I feel that we ought to be afraid of looking at those things and taking necessary steps to supplement, by government action, those things that are needed, such as schools. There's nothing new about school.
Mr. Spivak.
Do you estimate very sizable savings if this defense reorganization goes through?
Well, of course, it depends upon how it goes through, Mr. Spivak. I would think that there should be. And as you may notice in these figures we gave for increased defense spending, we couldn't give a precise figure because we had to give a range. We don't know what they'll be. But I would think they would be very substantial, perhaps not as much. In fact, I don't think there'll be as much as the necessary increases. In other words, I think the total will go up, although it won't go up as much as it would have to if they didn't make these
savings. Your committee made some estimates of how much money they could save if they followed the advice, if the government followed the advice that you gave them. Would you say that it would be in the area of $3 to $5 billion?
No.
Or higher than that or lower than that?
The figures that we use in here are based on an addition of $3 billion a year compounded, 369, for this 10-year period, and savings of about half that much, so that there would be an increase that would go up of about half of that.
I'd like to ask you one question on the educational part of this last report. You say on page 70, if you should want to refer to it, that universal free education is the key to equality of opportunity in this country, is basic to the function of a truly democratic society. Just what do you mean by that? Do you mean that the government ought to give anybody who has the ability and who wants an education, give it to them?
What we were talking about was the tradition of this country, that the freedom of the individual and his opportunity in this country, one of the rights of opportunity was related to education, and that has been a great tradition in this country. And we have got, as a matter of fact, Mr. Spivak, we got a report coming on education and manpower, which should be the next report out, in which we go into this whole thing in great detail.
Yes, but you referred specifically to this question of equality of opportunity in this report on the matter of education, and you projected some figures about how much should be spent. Now, do you think that just as every boy in this country can get a free high school education, every boy and girl ought to be able to get a free college education if he wants it and has the ability to use it?
Well, it's been an evolution from the number of years and the amount of education that the country has felt that people were entitled to have as part of their rights have kept rising. And in many states, if not most, college education is available free.
No, but I do you think everybody ought to get it? That question I want to get at the heart of your report.
Are you saying
in your report that anybody who can ought to get a free college education? That isn't true today in many, many states, many, many areas. And many boys and girls can't go to college because they haven't got the money.
Well, the report did not go into that because we are coming with another one, and therefore the question you're asking really wasn't covered in this report.
One quick question.
Mr. Child, excuse me.
You suggest here that prices are too high when you say consumers will buy when they get a good value. Do you think prices are too high in the country today, and what particular prices?
Well, the report really didn't use the word prices because for a specific reason. We said that if manufacturers or producers would give better values, they would encourage larger purchases.
Now, Mr. Mueller.
One quick question. Did Mr. Eisenhower see this? He's obviously anticipated some of the suggestions in this report. Did he see it before publication?
I don't think he has.
Mr. Oakes.
Back to politics for just a minute. Do you agree with the quite frequently expressed view that this is going to be a Democratic year in the election?
Oh, no.
Well, then, sir, if it isn't in New York, who do you think could beat Governor Harriman for governor?
Oh, I think any qualified Republican.
Would you care to name any?
That'd get too personal.
Mr. Spivak, short
Mr.
question.
Mr. Rockefeller, you a short one?
Very short.
I'm afraid this is much too long for it. I'll try to shorten it. I wonder, you've worked with New Dealers so much. Why are you Republican? Is it just because of the tradition of your family?
No, that, of course, is part of it. But I think any party that started with Abraham Lincoln and has reached the point where it has an Eisenhower's presence, pretty good party to be a part of.
I think that's an adequate answer for the present, Mr. Rockefeller. I'm sorry to have to interrupt, but I see that our time is up.
Our thanks to Nelson Rockefeller and the members of the panel for a stimulating and enlightening half hour. Meet the Press, a regular feature on Monitor, is produced by Lawrence E. Spivak. You, who are listening to me right now, are potential firebugs. 9 out of every 10 forest fires are not caused by lightning, as many people still believe, but by human beings. Just a little care, a little thoughtfulness on your part, and our valuable timber and watershed lands, so vital to national strength and civilian security, can be saved. Observe these 4 simple rules, and you'll be doing your part to prevent forest fires. Crush out cigarette, cigar, and pipe ashes. Break matches in 2 after using. Drown all campfires. And find out the law before using fire. Remember, only you can prevent forest fires. This is Monitor. Our guests on Monitor throughout the evening include Count Basie and famous cartoonist Saul Steinberg, plus our regulars Bob Hope, Fibber McGee and Molly, George Goebel, and Bob and Ray. The news coming up at the top of the hour with Leon Pearson. Dave Garraway joins us here on Monitor.
This is Monitor, the NBC Weekend Radio Service.